Have you ever heard a musical artist described as having great chops? What does that mean? Well, the term chops is slang in the music business that refers to an artist that has developed great skills over time, whether they are a musician, composer, producer, or other titles associated with the music business. This is Scott Grimaldi, your host of Got Chops. Join me as I interview one musical artist per episode that I've had the pleasure of either performing, recording, or work with in my career. Plus, I'll be interviewing artists I've always wanted to speak with. We'll discover how each artist developed their chops, listen to their stories, and much more. This is Got Chops. My special guest artist for today is one of the leading euphonium players of the 21st century. That's him playing behind me as the featured soloist with the Royal Symphonic Band of the Belgium Air Force on the composition Eagle's Flight by Wim Bex. My guest artist began playing the euphonium at 11 years old in a local wind band conducted by his father. Shortly after that, this prodigy was recruited to play with the Championship Festival Brass Band and Brass Band Heist, followed by joining one of the top bands in Europe, Brass Band Bezingen. My guest has won solo championships of his native Belgium in every category, the European Solo Championships in Austria, and was the youngest winner of the British Open Solo Championship, just to name a few. In addition to juggling a busy touring and teaching schedule, my guest is also an artist endorser for AR Resonance Mouthpieces, who created a signature euphonium mouthpiece in his name. This international euphonium player certainly got chops. Please welcome Glenn Van Lowy. Hi, Glenn. This is Scott from the American podcast Got Chops. How are you?
I'm very fine, thanks. How are you?
Very good. So on the phone, calling from Switzerland right now, is my special guest artist for today. This is Glenn Van Lowy. He's considered to be one of the finest, one of the best euphonium players in the world. I discovered Glenn on social media not too long ago, and I was immediately impressed by his tone, his technique, his musicianship, everything. And when you hear the different musical examples today, and when you research him on social media, I'm sure you're going to agree like myself, this is one of the best artists out there in the world. So, Glenn, thank you so much for joining me. I'm looking so forward to our interview.
Me too, Scott. Thanks. It's one of my first podcasts, actually.
So, as a euphonium player from Belgium, have you ever heard of an American music slang, Got Chops?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
How does that relate to you? What do you make of that when you hear someone say, oh, that person got chops?
I think it means, especially for brass players, that you've got very good stamina, that you're just basically a very good player with good range and good tone quality. Or we also say, I've got good chops when you're in good shape, or I've got bad chops, which is mainly some of the days as well.
Absolutely. And as you're very well aware, it originated with brass players. Then it became sort of generic with all other musicians. So I read that you were born in Bonhinden. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, in Bonhinden, yeah.
Okay, in the province of Antwerp, Belgium. Is that where you grew up?
It is where I grew up. Well, Bonhinden is where the hospital is. I grew up in a small village in the province of Antwerp, with just a village where all my family is. And then, of course, yeah, the bigger cities is Antwerp and Mechelen nearby, yeah.
I also read that the port of Antwerp is recognized as the hub of the world's diamond trade. Is that correct?
Yeah, true, yeah. If you drive into Antwerp by train, then you come by all the diamond shops. I think it was very, very popular and a big source in Antwerp.
That's fascinating. So where do you currently live?
I'm living in Switzerland now, in the canton of the Valais, near Sion, which is the capital. And I've been living here since 2016 now, yeah. So quite a while since, yeah.
I'm sure it's really beautiful there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a little village somewhere in the Swiss Alps. So I can't complain. Definitely can't complain.
So besides English, what other languages do you speak?
So my native language is Dutch, because I'm from the Flanders part of Belgium, where we speak Dutch or Flemish, which is an accent of Dutch. And then in school, we also have French, because it's our second language. And since I've been living here, I'm working and doing conducting work in French. So I speak, Flemish or Dutch, French and English. A little bit of German, but... I understand more than I speak.
But that comes in handy when you're touring as a musician and communicating with people.
Yeah, exactly. Almost wherever you go, people speak English. So it comes in very handy, yes.
You are considered to be one of the leading euphonium players of the 21st century. Was euphonium your first instrument of choice when you began to play and study music, or did you gravitate towards it after playing other low brass instruments?
Usually when you start in Belgium, we have a very big fanfareband culture. And a fanfareband is like a big wind band, but instead of the whole clarinet choir, it's replaced by flugelhorns. I think it's got to do with the connection we had with Adolf Sachs and all those instruments. So when you're a kid and you start at the age of 7 or 8, mainly you take a flugelhorn or a cornet. But I never wanted to do it, and I wanted straight to the euphonium. So I've always been playing the euphonium from since I was 7 or 8.
That's interesting. Share with my non-music listeners the difference between a euphonium and baritone horn, since they look pretty similar.
They look very similar, yes. It's just built a little bit different. I even think that the length of the tubing is the same, but the baritone is just a little bit more compressed and a little bit more cylindrical, whether the euphonium is very conical and... It's just built a little bit bigger. We all also have a Ford valve standard, and the baritone horns, they do have Ford valves now since a couple of years, but it's mainly a 3-valve instrument. The tuning is better with 3 valves. It sounds just a little bit smaller, but the playing and also the mouthpiece is almost exactly the same.
I want to go back to something that you just said, just to make sure I have it right. You mentioned that when you begin in these wind ensembles, brass bands, you are taught to play flugelhorn, correct?
Yeah, so mainly when you start, people start on flugelhorn, but I never wanted to do it, so I never touched it. I went straight into euphonium.
Now that's interesting, because here in the States, young students that play trumpet, they normally gravitate towards flugelhorn when they're in jazz band, maybe in middle school, but certainly in high school and college, but they don't really touch it before then. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's because we have a big heritage of the fanfare bands, where there's all the clarinet voices are played by flugelhorns, so you will have 3 rows of flugel players.
You began playing euphonium in a local wind band, as you mentioned, but this was conducted by your father, who was a bass trombonist. At 11 years old,
yeah, exactly,
you were recruited to play with the Championship Festival Brass Band, and then at 12 years old, as the solo euphonium player with Brass Band Heist, followed by joining one of the top bands in Europe, Brass Band Bazingen. I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
So share with my listeners the importance and tradition of competing European brass bands.
The brass band community is very competitive. So you have some regional competitions. It comes back from the coal mines in England, and then it came back over to the north of France and Belgium. It's just a very competitive community. Bands go to contests. There's a national contest, and then there's a European contest with an extremely high level. The thing is that most of them are all amateur musicians. So, of course, now in some of the bands, there are professional players as well, but most of them are amateur players. They go twice a week to rehearsal, and during a competition or leading up to a competition, it's even more. It's quite incredible how much time they spend in the band room, as we call it.
A lot of my brass player friends that are very, very dedicated to what they do, they talk about this, you know, quite often. So I want to ask you, because I'm assuming you're much, much younger than I am, are you familiar with the 1996 movie called Brassed Off? It was about a competing brass band from Northern England.
Yeah, of course I'm familiar. Yeah, that's one of it was one of my favorite movies, because I was so much into brass bands. I didn't know it was from 96, you said, because I'm from 91. I've watched it a couple of times, and it's exactly what I was saying. So that coal mine community, and then the big competition in the Royal Albert Hall, it still exists. It's still the London Nationals in the Royal Albert Hall. Yeah.
So would you say that the way they depicted what, you know, brass competing brass bands are in Europe is spot on, or are there some things that are not exactly true?
Of the movie, you mean?
Yes.
I think it's a bit how it goes. Yeah, you've got the following of the band. I wouldn't say we shout anymore when the other band is playing, but it's very competitive. Yes, indeed.
And that's a great movie for anyone that wants to, you know, get a window into what Glenn is talking about. It's really, really fascinating. And it was quite funny, too. It was a charming movie. So where did you attend music conservatory during your college years? And did you major in euphonium performance?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I went, I started playing under my dad, and then I went to a local music school with a trumpet teacher, a very, very good trumpet teacher who also teaches low brass. And then I went to a special school for music in high school, where I started to team up with my teacher, who I still got in the university. So it was the same teacher through that high school, specific high school, and the university, and it was in Leuven in Belgium. It's the town where Stella Artois is from. So listeners might know Stella Artois, maybe the beer, the Belgian beer. And it's the that village where or that city where the conservatoire was. It was called the Lemmens Institute, and I did my bachelor and my master's degree there. Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let's go back to your dad. He was a bass trombonist. So I'm assuming you probably heard him practicing in the house, and then you saw him conducting his brass band. Would you say that was a pivotal moment for you and probably a source of inspiration?
Yeah, of course, yeah. I can see that I'm doing kind of similar things now with my two kids. I remember when my mom or dad put me in bed, then a couple of minutes later, my room was right above the music room, and then my dad started to practice. So sometimes it annoyed me, and I could hear a trombone underneath my bed. But I always fell asleep, and I can see my wife and myself doing it now, putting the kids in bed and starting to practice. So it's quite funny. But as a kid, the rehearsals were on Friday night of the band that my dad conducted, and my mom was playing there as well. She was playing saxophone.
Oh wow!
So we and my sister and I, we would go to rehearsal with our parents. It was in the garage of the president of the band. We could listen to the first half of the rehearsal. They would have a break, and then my mom would put us in bed in the house of the president. And then afterwards, they would stay after the band had finished. They've put us in the car whilst we were sleeping, and the next morning we would wake up in our own house without noticing that they've shipped us over in the car and then back in our beds. So from a very young age, I was listening to music and to rehearsals. And that's why I picked the euphonium. So I made some friends there. And instead of playing flugel, I said, no, I want to sit next to you. So I had no idea what he was holding. Of course, I knew that it was a euphonium, but I had no idea that it would take it me that it would take me to where I am now. So that's how I picked the euphonium, and that's how I was underwhelmed by music from a very early age. Yeah.
Were there professional euphonium artists in the world, you know, that had recordings that inspired you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I listen to all of them. I have a very big collection of CDs. So I was listening to Stephen Mead, David Childs, Glyn Williams when they had a CD out. If they were in the country or in the Netherlands and it wasn't too far, my dad would drive me there to listen to the concert and to try and have a masterclass with them. So I've been very lucky with the support I've had and with the inspiring people that I could hear and learn from.
That's fantastic. Wow. Another pivotal moment for you. So name some of the awards that you've received as a soloist in the prestigious European competitions and how it's opened doors for you as a euphonium player with various orchestras.
I went through all the local and national competitions, which was mainly just for brass instruments. It was never mixed. And then at the end of that, when you're 18, there's a big competition organized by a bank, which is against violin, piano, and all that, which I won too. And then I could play in the final and as a winner at the prize concerts with a symphony orchestra. So that was great. That opened a lot of doors. But I think the biggest award that opened all the doors I've walked through now would be the British Open Solo Competition. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, but it was one of the oldest solo competitions organized by the same organizers as the famous British Open Brass Band Championships. I know it was 2008 when I won it. I was the youngest winner of the competition, and that took me to or that qualified me for the Ern Keller competition in Sydney in Australia. So then we organized a concert in my town's church to raise money and to go to Sydney for that competition. And then I was very lucky to win it over there as well. And then everything started. And I went to the Jeju competition in South Korea, which is a big competition for euphonium and for brass. And I won that one as well. And the Lieksa competition in Finland too. So I've been to all the competitions. The one I wanted to do was ITEC, the International Tuba and Euphonium Conference. But I already had won the two others. So they've asked me as a jury, so I couldn't participate. It's of course, winning those awards opens a lot of doors. People know you and people want to hear you. So then concerts start. And that's, I would say, after the British Open 2008, my career or my solo career really started.
Does that include touring and performing in the United States?
So I was at the ITEA, the International Tuba and Euphonium Conference in Atlanta by Adam Fry, and I'll be there again this summer.
Oh, that's great. Wow. So do you ever commission new works for Euphonium, or I should say, do you also compose your own works?
I don't compose my own works, no, because we've got a great repertoire, and I think I didn't study composition. There's people, talented people that can just do it without studying it, or other people that study it and are great at it. But I think that I've got so much music already, I've played already so much music, so I don't want to copy or write something that's already been done. So I commissioned a lot of pieces. Yeah, for almost all my CDs, they were all new commissions.
Do you prefer playing traditional classical works for Euphonium, or contemporary, or both?
I would say both. Yeah, I really like transcriptions and classical Euphonium works, but I also like to play contemporary music. I did a subject in university for contemporary music, where I created a few new pieces with one of the composers of the university, which were crazy but really, really nice to do. It just opened so many boundaries, and I like jazzy stuff as well. So I try and play all styles. Yeah.
With your technique, which is brilliant, by the way, I'm sure you could play transcribed jazz solos by, you know, John Coltrane or any main great jazz artist living, or, you know, who has passed away. Have you ever done that or ever thought about doing that?
Not really. I've done more of the lighter stuff that's really specifically written for Euphonium, like Euphonium and percussion, or that kind of stuff. But yeah, it would be a good idea to do some of that stuff as well. Yeah.
AR Resonance Mouthpieces has created the Glenn Van Lowy Signature Euphonium Mouthpiece, of which you are also an AR Resonance artist. What is the process of working with a mouthpiece company when designing a mouthpiece that you approve of?
It's quite a long progress, but it went quite fast, actually, in a way, because Antonio Rapaciulio, who is the owner of the AR Resonance Mouthpieces, I came across him on a trombone festival, and I knew he did trombone mouthpieces and trumpet mouthpieces. So I asked if he had euphonium ones, and he said, yeah, I made some. So I went then I went over to his workshop in Italy, which is not very far, because I just cross the Alps and I'm there. It's about a 3-hour drive. So it was easy to collaborate with him in real as well, and not just trying to talk about it and then make some designs on the paper and then email and then send the prototype over. So we could do everything with his machines there. So we took the base of his euphonium mouthpiece, or the trombone mouthpiece that he already had, and then we just changed it whilst playing. We changed the inner shape a little bit, the outside, the rim, how it would be better for a euphonium player, and then more importantly, we changed also the material. So the mouthpiece is made out of bronze instead of brass, which gives a different feel and a different sound as well. Yeah.
You're also a teacher. So what grades, what levels of students do you have?
I've got all levels of students. So I'm in a local music school in Sion, in the Valleys, and I cover the whole valley region. So I've got people that start, beginners and older people. They go through a whole system of grades over here. So I've got the beginners and the people that will play a final recital to have their amateur diploma, you can say. But then I'm also an assistant at the university in Lucerne. So there I'll teach the undergrads and postgrads students together with Thomas Rudy.
I'm sure your students of all grades and ages are just floored by your technique and your tone, as I mentioned before. And I've always admired and respected someone like yourself, especially you, for what you do, that you can walk the walk and talk the talk. You know, so if someone is not, one of your students is not playing a passage exactly the way it should be, you can get up and demonstrate it, and they respect you so much more. So I'm sure, you know, they must look at you like, wow, this is the euphonium god, like a guitar god.
I don't know about that. Some of the younger people, they've got no idea, and they come here because their parents tell them to. But yeah.
You know, when they get older, they're going to appreciate more of what and realize what you taught them. So let's talk about your music. If you could pick two different musical selections that you've recorded that you feel best represents what you do as a euphonium player, that I could filter into this interview as you speak about them now.
One of the nice things about euphonium is the nice sound, as you probably know, is euphonium means nice sound in Greek, or euphonia. And what we can do is play almost like a singing voice, because we've got the range. So I always include a slow piece of music in my recitals, and therefore I've picked Walking on Music by a Belgian composer. It was written for Stef Pilaert, a great Belgian euphonium player who doesn't play anymore now, but he was the principal euphonium of brass band Willebroek. So it's Walking on Music by Roger Deranger. Second piece I would like you to hear is 22 by Stan Aartgaerts. He's a young Belgian composer who played in the same village band as where I started. So we go along a few years. It's written for my brass quartet that I started here in Switzerland with two players from my band, Valesia Brass Band, and one of the Tres Étoiles. And it shows a nice way of playing the euphonium in an ensemble, because I always like playing in ensembles, small ensembles or bigger ensembles, to have a different voice as a euphonium player.
Do you also have aspirations, or have you conducted a brass band like your dad did?
Yeah. I'm conducting two village bands at the moment here in Switzerland, and I've already done some conducting overseas as well. So I've been going to the UK to conduct some brass bands at competitions, and now in April I will be conducting the Danish band for the European Championships. So I'm a lot into conducting. I think it goes together, playing and conducting. If you can conduct the part, then you can play it, and the other way around. And the way I practice, I think I can use it as a conductor to try and give them more, not only about the music, but also about the basics. Like I would teach my students, or you can teach a band and try and get them to play in the same style. So I like to combine all sorts.
That's great, and it keeps it interesting in your life, doing all these different things that are all related. So as a soloist and teacher, how do you juggle the life of a touring musician, teaching, and raising a family?
It's not always very easy, I must say. But I don't teach 100%, so I don't have a full-time teaching job. So I've 2 days a week normally for free, or where I can schedule in more lessons if I'm on tour afterwards. And I'm very lucky that the school where I'm at, the principal, he knows about touring. He toured himself, so they're all flexible. The biggest challenge is the family, of course. So of course you miss them, and it makes me choose my touring a little bit more than when I already toured when I was a student. So then I never went to the lessons, to the theory lessons. So listeners, they shouldn't take an example of this, because I was always practicing, and I didn't really put enough interest maybe in all the theory lessons. But I had a good friend of mine that was in the same year as me, and every time the teacher would ask, "Where's Glenn?" and then he would say, "Oh, he's in Spain. Where's Glenn?" "Oh, he's in England now." So I was always on the road. But now, with having a family, a job, my conducting, it makes me pick and choose a lot more. Instead of saying yes to everything, I'll just see if it's a very interesting gig, if it's something somewhere where I want to go, where I want to play, or the repertoire I want to play. So I can, with the job I've got now and the family, I can pick and choose. Yeah.
That's great. You're very lucky. And it sounds like you have a supportive family and wife. That's really great.
Yeah, it helps. She's a musician too, so she knows. Well, she's not a professional musician, but she plays in the same brass band and in the quartet. So she knows the efforts it takes, and she knows how it is, yeah.
So do you have any upcoming live performances or projects you'd like to announce?
Now I'm quite busy teaching and conducting over here, because the concert season with my bands is going to be there very soon. And then, of course, as I said before, I will be going to Denmark to prepare a band for the European Brass Band Championships, which takes on some time. I've got a recital with a piano player over here in a very nice hall, which will be good. That's on the 12th of March. And then I'll be visiting ITEA, the International Tuba and Euphonium Festival in Atlanta. Mid-June.
That sounds exciting. So where can my listeners find you on social media?
They can find me on Instagram. I'm trying to be a little bit active on Instagram sometimes. So I think it's Glenn Youth from Euphonium on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. I'm not very good at updating my website, so I wouldn't make publicity yet for my website. But on social media, I'm trying to catch up with everything.
It's very time consuming. I understand what you're saying. So where can my listeners find and purchase your music?
Most of my CDs are recorded for World of Brass, and they've got a website where you can subscribe and listen to it, or you can find the details of purchasing on the website, or people can ask me, can send a message to me for CDs or at concerts, of course. I haven't put stuff on Spotify yet. I'm still wanting to do it because my first CD, which I recorded, I can't remember when, more than 10 years ago, it was sold out after a year, and I didn't print new ones. So people still want that CD. So I really should make an effort and put it out on Spotify and all other platforms. But I'll promise to do it soon.
Well, Glenn, thank you so much for granting me this time. I've learned so much about you. I'm sure you've taught and enlightened my audience and opening up the world of euphonium, which is really not something that, you know, most of my young students would hear. But I'm so glad that you have talked about what you do as a euphonium soloist and as an artist, and your music is absolutely tremendous. So I hope to speak to you in the future, and thank you once again for your time.
Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for joining me on today's show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and could hear why my guest got chops. You can follow my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Anchor.fm, and stay connected between episodes on Instagram at GotChopsPodcast. Join me on the next episode when we discover why my next guest got chops.